thank you for joining me today to
Not
talk
a problem,
about
Alex.
The annual Lowy Institute poll, which we're releasing today on June the 4th, 2014. For those of you who are not familiar with his work, Sol Lebovic is one of Australia's most distinguished pollsters. He founded NewsPoll in 1985 and ran it for more than two decades, building it into one of Australia's most reliable polling organisations. The Australian newspaper was, of course, one of NewsPoll's most important clients. However, the Lowy Institute poll now has the benefit of Sol's expertise and has had for the last 6 years of our polling. 2014 is an important year for us because it is the year of the 10th annual Lowy Institute poll. So it seemed like a good time for us to reflect a bit on our polling history and about how the Lowy Institute poll actually works. So I'd like to ask you about how and why we've arrived at our methodology for the poll, which is now very established. So there are a few moving parts here, and perhaps we could start with a sample, which is the number of respondents who actually participate in the poll. The usual number being about 1,000 participants in each poll. How did we arrive at this number?
Well, obviously, the ideal would be to interview everyone in Australia, and no one can ever afford that except the government with the census, the Australian Bureau of Statistics.
Of course.
Census. So what we need to do is take a sample, and when we take a sample, we're always going to get a slight variation if we took two different samples. And the idea of getting to a sample size that gives us a fair amount of reliability comes around the sampling variation that you get with that sample. Now, if we take a sample of 1,000, we expect the variation is going to be plus or minus 3 percentage points. And at that kind of level, most people are generally comfortable that's giving you a fair degree of accuracy without having to spend a fortune in doing huge sample sizes.
Is that the sort of sample size that you used to do at NewsPoll?
Yes, we used to do about 1,200, 1,100 voters in the polling situations. Around election time, we used to do more than that, but the reason was not to get the national figure right, but as we know in elections, there can be differences by state and by electorate, and if we wanted to break the sample down into various electorates, then you need a larger overall sample to give you sufficient sample in individual electorates. But generally, 1,000 is regarded as quite a good sample nationally.
It's a pretty standard sample as far as I've seen with respect to other polling organisations in the foreign policy area, for example, Pew Research and Chicago Council. They all use a sample of almost exactly 1,000 as well.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is that a lot of people don't understand that if you take a population of the US, which is a lot larger than ours, the sample of 1,000 is still sufficient for that population because the sample itself is irrespective of population size. All the statistics, the formula that work all that out is based on things other than population size. So 1,000 works well in Australia's population with over 20 million people and also in the US with over 200 million people.
I've always thought it interesting that when you increase the sample size quite dramatically, you only get a very small increase in the error margin, the actual accuracy of the poll. So, for example, if you had a sample of 5,000 Australians, how much more accurate would that sample be in terms of, you know, plus or minus the error margin on each particular result?
Well, it's very much a law of diminishing returns. So if we double the sample, we don't get the double the accuracy. So if we go to 5,000, like on a sample of 1,000, we're getting a variation of plus or minus 3 percentage points. If we go to 5,000, though, it only reduces roughly in half to about 1.4%.
Right.
So that it's not a lot more accurate unless we are really trying to distinguish between a figure around 51% versus 49%, then we do need that much larger sample.
Right.
But in general policy areas, if we know, you know, within a couple of 2-3 percentage points, that's generally fine.
Yeah. Tommy, this year we decided to include some more 18 to 29-year-olds in our sample. How this came about was that we'd had some really intriguing and quite concerning results from our last two polls in 2012 and 13 about how this younger age group saw the value of democracy. And in the 2012 poll, we found that only 39% of young Australians in this age group said that democracy is preferable to any other kind of government. almost the same number said that in some circumstances a non-democratic government could be preferable, and nearly a quarter of that age group said that for someone like me, it doesn't matter what kind of government we have. Not surprisingly, there was a great deal of interest in these results, with politicians, journalists and academics very concerned about how this seemed to show that young Australians were quite disengaged from their civic life and the traditions, the proud traditions of our democratic history. So this year we decided to try and find out what was behind this seeming ambivalence. But Sol, there was a problem, wasn't there, with using our usual base sample of 1,000 Australians in terms of the representativeness of the sample, if we were trying to probe quite deeply into the views of the 18 to 29 year olds. What did we need to do to make those results more indicative, more reliable?
Well, the fact that we only did 1,000 last year and in previous years meant that we had a relatively small number of people in that age group, the 18 to 29 year olds, and hence the sampling error was much larger. So we couldn't be as definitive about the findings with that kind of sample. So what we did, we boosted the sample of 18 to 29 year olds, so we got a base of over 300 of those respondents, and then we had more reliability in the result and we could be more confident that what we were finding was the actual result.
And very nice to be able to report back that adding those extra 150 18 to 29 year olds did in fact confirm the last 2 years of our polling on this very thorny issue of how they see democracy. So that was a good result, and we can be much more confident about the views of that age group. So that leads me to the next point. The telephone interviewer actually asks a series of questions before they actually start with the, you know, with our polling questions, to try and make sure that they're, you know, reaching all the quotas and the targets so that the sample's representative. What sort of questions do they ask up front?
Well, even before we get to asking the questions, the interviewers have a quota of getting so many interviews in different geographical areas. So many in Sydney, so many in the rest of New South Wales, etc., throughout the country, so that we get the kind of quotas we want. So in each region, we have a sufficient base of respondents, so that we can then weight the results to get them, make them reliable across the country. Then the interviewer will ask age and sex, because we also know there can be biases in results depending on a person's age, depending on whether they're male or female or whatever. So then there are quotas set for age and sex as well, so that we go into the sample constructing it in a way that we have sufficient number of respondents in each age, sex, cell, and also within geography.
Because it's important in Australia to make sure we get that mix of, you know, urban and rural population right, isn't it?
Exactly, and also large state versus smaller state.
Yeah, of course, South Australia and Tasmania, Northern Territory. I guess ACT, they always need to be covered as well.
Yep.
Tell me, we try to get our field work done in the shorter possible time. What's the reason behind that? Why can't we just string it out over 6 months?
Because the real world changes in 6 months, and we could have a major event that is correlated to one of the questions we have, and then we wouldn't be sure of the findings, because some of the interviews would be done before that event happened and some of the interviews would be done after, and it tends to make for a sort of a muddy result. It makes it hard to interpret it. I think it's important to keep interviewing over a short period of time to avoid the real world changing.
Finally, Sol, can you explain what we do with the raw data once the interviews are all complete? I get this whopping set of spreadsheets of 500 or so pages of the raw data, so the actual responses from the actual people. What happens then to that data?
Well, the most important thing to do then is to weight the data, W-E-I-G-H-T, back to the population. We said earlier that we set quotas to make sure that we've got enough respondents in the smaller states and by age and sex cells and all that kind of thing. And that means that it's not then representative of the Australian population. So what we do is we take the raw results and we weight it back to the known statistics based on the census and updates of the census. So for example, we did more interviews in WA than exist as a proportion of the population. So what we do is we weight them back a bit, and we weight those in Sydney where we didn't do as many interviews as we should have prorated to population. we weight them up so that the final results are fully representative of the Australian population by geography, by age and by sex. And that gives us a good representation. We actually take it a step further and also weight by education to make sure that if there are any biases there, depending on the education level of respondents, that we bring it back into line with national statistics.
So, thank you. Just one final question, though this could be shooting myself in the foot. Is there anything that you think we could be doing better or more of?
Well, I think there are a couple of things. The first thing is maybe do the poll more often. Opinions don't necessarily change only once a year. They can change more often than that. And if the poll were done more often, we'd be able to pick up those trends more quickly when they actually do happen. And the other thing is a larger sample size. While 1,000 interviews or the 1,150 interviews is sufficient at the total level to report results, sometimes the more fascinating findings are within certain demographics. And as we cut and dice the data into smaller groups, then you start to get into very small sample sizes. And sometimes it would be better to have larger samples so we could be more confident of the differences we're getting, that they are statistically significant.
Which is exactly why we increased that 150 boost sample for the 18 to 29-year-olds, so that we could review and report reliably on their attitudes. Well, if only we had an endless supply of polling funding, we would love to do all of that and more. But thank you very much, Sol, for coming today and describing so eloquently how the Lowy Institute poll works. Thank you.
You're welcome, Alex.